Welcome to a History of Horror podcast, a year-long journey through films throughout the decades, examining across the globe what makes us scared. I'm going to do something a little annoying for this episode. I'm going to dart around and group things together that shouldn't be grouped. We can't go country by country on this journey. I'd be doing this for years. Tonally, we can group some ideas and areas, and in particular, that's true in Europe. That way, you won't have to wait a fortnight for my opinions on the three Finnish horror films that might be worth talking about. One of the biggies with this decision that I've made is that tone can carry over, not just between countries, but between decades. Haxen is an example of this. It's in Danish Heksen, and also known as The Witches or Witchcraft Through the Ages. Now, it's a 1922 Swedish-Danish silent film written and directed by Benjamin Christian. Now, it's actually based partly on Christian's study of Malleus Maleficarum, a 15th century German guide for inquisitors. Haxen's a study of how superstition and the misunderstanding of diseases and mental illness can lead to hysteria and witch hunts. Now, the film was originally conceived and made as a documentary, but because of its dramatised sequences, it's comparable to horror. It was the most expensive Scandinavian silent film ever made, costing nearly 2 million Swedish kroner. It was won acclaim in Denmark and Sweden, but was banned in the US and heavily censored in other countries for what was considered at the time graphic depictions of sex, torture, and perversion. Christensen spent 2 years, from 1919 to 21, studying manuals, illustrations, and treatises on witches and witch hunting after finding this book of the Malarius Maleficarum in a Berlin bookshop. It was meant to be something different, a documentary in style, but something that was certainly against being an adaptation of literary fiction. In principle, he said, I am against these adaptations. I seek to find the way forward to original films. He managed to get the money from a Swedish big production company rather than Danish film studio. And he used the money to buy and refurnish a film studio in Hellerup in Denmark. Filming ran for a long time, between February and October of 1921. It was filmed at night, in a closed set, to maintain the film's dark hues. And the film required another year of post-production before it was able to be premiered in 1922. It's an interesting film to this day, strange and kind of weird. I know it's the kind of film that a lot of people are interested in horror, but not just that, but like, you know, silent film and trying to do unusual soundtracks to silent films go back to again and again. And part of the reason for that is that it is just so striking in its visuals. The Phantom Carriage was made at the same time as Haxen, known in Swedish as Kukalen. It's kind of pivotal in the centre of Swedish cinema. It was released on New Year's Day in 1921, and directed and starred Victor Sjöström alongside Hilda Bergström. It's based on a novel called Thy Soul Shall Bear Witness, by Swedish author Selma Lagerlöf. I mean, it's noticeable, not really for its story though, but for its special effects. Well in advance of its time. and also for its flashbacks, without a within flashback, something that's normally poo-pooed of now, but created a complicated and tiered narrative structure, which was apparently a major influence on Ingmar Bergman. Again, this suffered from a huge lengthy post-production, which mainly due to its extensive use of special effects, all of which were kind of created by the cinematographer Julius Janonard and the lab executive Eugen Hellman. They used double exposures made in the camera, since optical printing wasn't available, which is a risky business, as you can imagine, in case it didn't actually work properly. They were advanced even further by creating several layers on top of each other, which allowed the ghost characters to walk around in three dimensions and appear to be physically in, actually in the space rather than just layered on top. So they would be able to kind of be behind objects and then in front of objects in the space. And objects would be able to be seen through the ghost's semi-transparent body. An issue was that the camera, though, was hand cranked, which meant obviously that you had to kind of ensure that it was cranked at exactly the same speed each time. As I said, so it would all appear to fit together. Again, incredibly complicated for what it was, and you know, real work of a labour of love, I suppose would be best to say. But yeah, the figure of death was used in Bergman's The Seventh Seal, and obviously then again as well, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. But the reference to him being a strict master is a reference to Phantom Carriage. Bergman says he actually saw The Phantom Carriage at the age of 15 and watched it at least once every year. Bergman actually recreated a TV play, The Image Makers, which is like a historical drama depicting the incredible chaos and dedication that was essential to making the film. There's even arguments that there are similarities between this and The Shining, particularly the scene where Jack Nicholson uses an axe to break through a wooden door. In Finnish horror, Teuvo Puro's Evil Spells is considered pretty seminal and one of the few notable entries in the genre. It's actually only just recently being restored. The story's about a young couple who go to live in a secluded farm. One day the groom's sister tells a story of a young witch's curse, for which she became blind. Because of general youthful stupidity, they also draw on the curse, and it all gets a bit unpleasant. The film's very basic in terms of how it's formed. There's only really a few shots, and despite being made in 1927, it's been one of its most notable elements of how grown up it is and quite mature in its themes. Rape, violence against children all pop up. It has an excellent horror atmosphere, although probably not a film that gained a great deal of attention. It is therefore could be considered one of the first shockers of its time. Although we've spoken about early shockers before, it isn't particularly something to jump up and down and scream about, but it is quite entertaining. I'd be lying though if I said that all horror films from this area are based on folklore and myth. That said, there are many that show it to be a theme that runs through cinema there generally, and also horror cinema. Pushing ourselves forward to modern day, Antichrist from 2009, Danish experimental horror film directed by Lars von Trier, starred William Dafoe and Charlotte Gainsbourg, tells the story of a couple who, after the death of their children, go to a cabin in the woods, where the man experiences strange vision and the woman manifests increasingly violent sexual behaviour, sadomasochism and body dysmorphia. The narrative is divided into a prologue, four chapters and an epilogue, and although it's a really it's a Danish production, but it was also co-produced by six different European countries and was filmed in Germany and Sweden. It won Gainsbourg Best Actress at the Cannes Film Festival, but immediately caused problems and issues and controversy. People saw its use of witchiness in terms of horror in the woods as being misogynistic. It is deeply against any kind of therapy or psychotherapy. It involved a dominating, psychologically abusive man, despite his insistence that he's doing good, and a woman who effectively becomes deranged and violent, and scenes of explicit sexual violence that would make many a man wince. As well as that, there are scenes of the absurd, of nature turning against itself. So, for example, the notorious fox that turns to the foe and declares that chaos reigns. Effectively, a moment where Von Trier turns to the audience and declares that he's about to take the brakes off. And sure enough, we enter into scene after scene of quite graphic violence. It is a horror film, although it is also art house. And for the people who are a bit squeamish about hardcore pornography, we also get a bit of that at the start of the film too. Von Trier is almost always trying to evoke some kind of response out of his audience. And with Antichrist, he certainly knew which buttons to press.
Feel the seat underneath you. Feel yourself sinking down into it, enfolding you. It's a nice feeling. All you feel is a pleasant warmth and heaviness. Imagine you're at Eden. Imagine you arrive at Eden through the woods. Gives you too much medication.
Dr. Wayne says you want me back home. I heard a sound, the cry of all the things that are to die.
That's what fear is. Your thoughts distort reality.
You have to have the courage to stay in the situation that frightens you.
She loves me. I can't do this. The ground is burning.
The ground is not burning.
Nature is Satan's church.
Do you know what you're saying?
You shouldn't underestimate him.
Tell me what you think is supposed to happen in the woods.
Where are you? I shouldn't have come here. Get out!
It was interesting that, indeed, that although it was obviously seen by many to have real merit, other people definitely disagreed. It's part of Van Trier's unofficial Depression trilogy. Kind of launches an interesting mix of films. Melancholia, which is considerably less in your face, and Nymphomaniac, which is considerably more in your face, as it were, or certainly in terms of sex. I would argue that even if you don't like it, it's certainly a challenging film. If we go over to Poland, there are some interesting bits and bobs. 2011's Haunted Poland is a horror film and found footage pieced together from amateur bits and bobs. You could argue it's told in cinema verite style, although that would be probably pushing the boundaries of truth. It tells the story of a recorded tape found, usual kind of palaver. It is a ghost story horror film, again about something, you know, going to a place and nature rearing up because of some kind of spirit-led strange happenings effectively happen in a girl's town where she once played with a Ouija board. Modern audiences will probably spot that that bears a lot of similarities to things like Paranormal Activity. But it's interesting to see the Polish getting in on that as well. If we look over in Finland again, we've got Rare Exports from 2010, a Finnish horror fantasy which is popular over in the UK and in the US as well. The reason why it's so popular is mainly because it is it's because of its evil Santa Claus kind of thing. Now, the killer Santa trope is something we could spend an episode on just on its own, but I don't think we're going to. But films like Christmas Evil, which listeners to Hypnobob's or Hypnagoria podcast is now called Mr. Jim Moon, will recognise him declaring it as the taxi driver of Santa slashes, which I'm prone to agree with. And, Silent Night, Deadly Night, other things like more spooky supernatural is Sint as well, which fits the mode of being like this and also being a Dutch film about, it's a Santa slasher basically, but I think it's interesting, in the US they have a guy who puts a suit on and goes out and starts slashing people. In Denmark, they have a story of a far more mythical-led idea about, it's a comedy horror, really, but it's a distortion of the traditions of Sinterklaas, portraying him as a ghost who murders of people when Christmas comes along on a full moon. So again, kind of leading into this idea of being myth-led and subversion of more traditional folk tale. Rare Exports, exactly the same kind of thing. Finnish, it's won a lot of awards, mainly because it is quite striking. I wouldn't say it's a popular Christmas favourite these days, but it is quite popular. Roger Ebert, for example, called it a rather brilliant lump of coal for your stocking. Claiming it's an R-rated Santa Claus origin story crossed with The Thing. Apart from the inescapable fact, he said, that the movie has Santa and reindeer in it, this is a superior horror film. A spot-on parody of movies about dead beings brought back to life. Oh, and all the reindeers are dead. Ebert concluded that this is a fine film, a dear, original, daring, carefully crafted film, and never for one instant winks at us that it's a parody. In its tone, acting, location, work, music, and inexorably mounting suspense, exemplary horror film. Apart from the detail that they're not usually subtitled A Christmas Tale and tell about terrifying wild Santas.
We finally found something else than just plain rocks and dirt.
This mountain is like a giant icebox.
A storing what?
We are standing on the biggest burial mound in the world.
Then no how that did.
Minkälaiset sudet tekee tämmöstä jälkeen?
Isot ja vittumaiset.
Isä! Syötti on viety!
We have Santa Claus.
Where is Mr. Green?
Selitä sille, että... Meillä on täällä pukki myytävänä.
Santa is going to find out who is naughty or nice.
kaunista joulua.
Aivan vitun railakasta uutta vuotta.
Certainly, its use of, particularly with synths as well, for that matter, its use of black humour, highlighting the absurdities of such a tale, helps kind of sugar the pill of absurdities. But, you know, you're talking about killer, monstrous Father Christmases. I think it's fair to say that that's a decent place to look. And I think that's certainly the tone that you should be looking at, especially when you're looking at, you know, monsters coming from the ice. For me, horror sometimes needs to embrace its absurdities more. The po-faced elements of certain modern torture porn can sometimes make them a little less fun than they should be. And luckily, or indeed, you know, the modern haunted house tales, which seem to be, you know, 90 minutes of screaming into the camera, can lose its way somewhat and forget that people kind of go and see horror films for fun. But here, certainly, there are two films that we've just spoken about that allow us to enjoy the ride. There's also, of course, Dead Snow, which kind of, again, follows this kind of fun parody of horror. That's a 2009 Norwegian send-up of Cabin in the Woods gore movies, cranking up the gore to similar levels in truth to Evil Dead and letting that play with that. A load of horny 20-somethings don't battle possessed demons, but instead kind of rock up against sadistic and rather juvenile acting Nazi zombies. It manages to mix gore with comedy in a way that a lot of the films we've discussed here do, and do it in a way that really kind of stand out. You could argue, of course, that what this is really Northern European films kind of trying to cash in on the benefits of kind of aping American films. This isn't anything particularly new, of course. If you take, for example, Reptilicus, a giant monster film about a fictional prehistoric reptile, which was a Danish-American co-production produced by American International Pictures and a Saga Studio. And in actual fact, it's two distinctly different films helmed by two different directors. So you've got a film directed by Paul Bang, who was released in Denmark in 1961. And then an American version, which was made in English with an almost entirely identical cast and directed by Sidney W. Pink. So effectively what happened was this American version was seen to be unpublishable in any form. And being in mind that this is AIP, we're talking about the world that gave us Blood for Dracula, we can possibly understand how bad this must have been. So instead, they kind of worked the two films together, and it was released in America in 1962. Pink was actually angry with this decision, but once he actually saw the film, he dropped the lawsuit, which kind of gives you an idea.
It's a piece of skin, like leather.
You have been invited here to see for yourselves one of the most amazing events in the annals of scientific history.
This is Grayson. All units. Fire at will.
So we've spoken about a lot of films that kind of, you know, are probably very distinctive in their style, and also are nods towards modern, you know, other maybe Americanized audiences. The one that always sticks in the mind of being the one that is the most like that, apart from Dead Snow, which really is a kind of a you know, a splatter movie with Scandinavian sensibilities, is Troll Hunter. Now, Troll Hunter was made in 2010, and it's a fantasy film more than a horror, but uses found footage mockumentary to pad it out, and does feature those kind of scenes of young people running around terrified. So we need to kind of put it in that horror mold. Written and directed by Andre Ovredal. It's unknown actors and Norwegian comedians, and kind of nods to the fact, again, that we've spoken about that a lot of the films we're talking about are based even on myth or on, but have comedic edges. Now, part of the reason for that is a lot of folk tales from this part of the world are, you know, about trolls or about devils that are actually tricksters that kind of lose their way and lose the fight. And then that's important because, you know, they're kind of like fables, really. And therefore, you can get away with kind of adding more lighter tone to them, which is obviously what we see here. Troll Hunter contains references to Norwegian culture, folktale in particular, and this belief that there are different species of trolls, and they're seen massive tall things wandering around the mountains. So there's a difference between woodland trolls and mountain trolls, and the film bothers to categorise these actually into subspecies as well. You know, so we've got things like the fact that trolls can smell Christian's blood, have multiple heads, have a tails, love eating rocks, love eating meat sometimes, and obviously are man-eaters. Big, old, strong, slow and dumb. And all that is based in traditional Norwegian folktale. So I think that's quite a brave idea, you know, from to bring to modern audiences. And it was received extremely well, not just in Norway, but also in the US and the UK as well. And I think that's partly because, obviously, you know, horror audiences sometimes like to feel something alien and different. But you can see the care that's gone into kind of creating this world and creating these monsters in it. And, you know, a lot more thought's gone into it than you probably would imagine.
Nå skal vi da opp til en gård her oppe, hvor det har vært noe på lokalnyhetene om hendelser.
Folk vil alltid prøve å finne naturlige forklaringer på sånne ting. Men hvis man oppsøker åsted og leter etter spor, det ikke vanskelig å finne ut om det troll som har vært på ferde.
Hvorfor skal ikke folk få vite hva som foregår her?
Skru av det kameraet.
No.
Hva tror du Michael Moore ga seg til første forsøk? Tror du det?
Det ingen her som tror på Gud eller Jesus.
Nei, det ingen som...
Fordi det lukter kristemannsbro.
Har det sikkert litt tid da, før han kommer med denne trollen?
Kanskje han filmer oss?
Det sitter sikkert en lærer hos et sted.
Hovedgrupper Berg, Troll og Skogsrå.
Se her, Thomas.
Nei. Raglefant, Tusseland, Vintusse.
Troll! Løp for faen! Kom dig væk!
Du, jeg skal fange ind der, altså.
Du muslim, sant?
Jeg muslim, ja.
Muslim? Det greit.
Det vet jeg ikke.
As well, Let the Right One In is of something that is worth mentioning. Swedish romantic horror film, obviously remade as Let Me In. It's a story based on a book of the same name by John Lindquist. And a story about a bullied 12-year-old boy develops a relationship with a vampire child. The thing that's most telling about this is that a lot of those kind of elements that we've already spoken about folklore, were actually dialed down in the film, which were occurring in the book, and instead focuses far more on two actors and their relationship with each other, you know, and some of the more sinister elements of the story have been kind of sucked out, not literally in a blood way, but it's still now seen as being, you know, a modern classic, certainly very intelligent, and an indication that there's more to horror from this area than just folklores, trolls, monsters and devils. I said I'd mention Germany, and I will. Mainly because we've only spoken up to like 1930s. Vampire, I think, was the last one we spoke about, wasn't it? From there, after the war, there was no appetite for horror. It didn't really start coming back until the 1950s and 1960s. So you had horror efforts were kind of like mad scientist types as well. So you had films like The Head, Horrors of Spider Island, but these are trashy B movies that didn't get a lot of joy. What was getting a lot of influence was crimi films, which are crime, pulp, genre stories. I wouldn't say as vicious as the Italian giallo, but more like the kinds of B-movie crime tales that we would get, such as The Fellowship of the Frog and things like that. And that was popular, and that led to a huge sway of these kinds of pretty, you know, basic B-movies. They didn't really have style or fanciful imagery of German horror, but they were based in reality. We're talking crime thrillers, really. Murder mysteries with elements of horror rather than anything more than that. Its titles were fantastic, though. The Door with Seven Locks, Dead Eyes of London, The Curse of the Yellow Snake, Creature with the Blue Hand. These were kind of overly complicated whodunits with a little bit of sex in there thrown in. They kind of nodded towards giallo, which was to come from Italy, which we'll talk about in our Italian episode. Although it did bring back to the world Fritz Lang's Dr. Mabuse, with The Return of Dr. Mabuse from 61, The Invisible Dr. Mabuse from 62, and Death Ray Mirror of Dr. Mabuse from 64. And these were kind of reflecting more the popularity of spy movies more than anything in truth. There was the odd occasional gothic horror, but these were nods to more towards the power and popularity of the Hammer films, which was revisiting, obviously, the Universal films. So you had, like, The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism, etc., which did feature Christopher Lee in an attempt to kind of drum up popularity, but it's not much to get excited about. It's really in 1970s that we started seeing a change in all this. So at this point, we're looking at, you know, things like Werner Herzog, who kind of kickstarts German cinema. You know, Signs of Life, even Dwarf started small. These kind of elements, and obviously, you know, well, Herzog's real only true horror film and extends rather than just using horrific imagery is his version of Nosferatu, which itself is not really a horror film as such, more of a poem talking through his love of Murnau's version of that film. And obviously has the benefit of being able to call, you know, our characters the names from the book, because it's out of copyright by this stage. But at the same time, you know, it did kind of bring in new German cinema. And it was part of that new German cinema run, I should say, which kind of touched on various elements. I think I'm going to leave Germany there and pop back to it again when we get to video, because there's films like Violent Shit and stuff like that, which I want to talk about at that stage. Yeah, that's probably the best way to do that stuff.
Ich lege keinen Wert mehr auf Sonnenschein und blitzende Fontänen, für die sich die Jugend begeistern mag. Ich liebe die Dunkelheit und die Schatten.
Jonathan, fahr nicht. Ich habe ein Gefühl.
Ach was.
Du wirst in Gefahr sein. Fahr nicht.
Herr Wirt, mein Essen. Ich muss heute noch zu Graf Draculas Schloss.
If you want to get a hold of me, please do. Thank you for all the wonderful feedback. Russian Horror was very well received, which is great. Next week, we're going to talk about a very particular time in US horror history. Basically 1968 to 84. I've pulled out between the people I'm going to talk about almost all come from a grindhouse background, but we're going to talk about grindhouse separately, if that makes sense. And the reason for that is that I want to speak about very particular people, very famous people, people you will know, but and I don't want to get bogged down in 42nd Street stuff. So we're going to kind of talk a bit about Grindhouse and then not talk about Grindhouse. But mainly we're going to talk about exactly what you'd imagine. American Masters of Horror and the Boomer genre is going to be Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, John Carpenter, Wes Craven, etc, etc. Exactly who you'd imagine. If by any chance you have any opinions on these seminal directors, please send them in. My email address is videonastiespodcast. No, it's not. No, it's not. That's the old one. My email address is historyofhorrorpodcast@gmail.com. You can go to historyofhorrorpodcast.com for videos and podcasts and that kind of thing. You can go to my Twitter, which is @orange_monkey. Or if you are in the northwest of England, come on Wednesday, May 27th, to a small cinema on Victoria Street in Liverpool and enjoy one of the films that we haven't got around to yet, but we will get around to it because it fits in the European horror mold, but it is a video nasty, so we'll talk about a video nasties as well. It's The Living Dead at the Manchester Morgue, which is a classic, 40 years old now, and heavily influenced by one of the films we're going to talk about next week, which is Night of the Living Dead. So, until then, and I very quickly blitz through some of your favourite film directors, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.